This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast to Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on modern slavery in the corporate world. I am joined by Senior Barrister Felicity Gerry QC from Libertas Chambers in London. Felicity leads for the defence in the most serious and complex trials and appeals at every level of court, often with an international element, including appearing in a series of high-profile terrorism trials, challenging homicide trials, and appeals correcting errors of law in both murder and manslaughter. Felicity is also Professor of Legal Practice at Deakin University, where she lectures in modern slavery law and advanced international legal practice, and she has been recognised in the Legal 500 as a leading silk and as being fearless and independent-minded. Felicity, good morning to you.
Hi, Hattie. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, I love that introduction. I told you my favourite bit is the fact that you're fearless and independent-minded. So
yes, well, it was published in Legal 500, so I have to try and live up to it now.
Well, you certainly do, and your work speaks for that, Felicity. Volumes. So modern slavery in the corporate world, and I remember quite some months ago when you and I mentioned this topic, and I said, oh, goodness, does that really still go on? Completely ignorant to everything at large. Yes, research has shown us that modern slavery is rife in corporate supply chains or in all regions of the world, and the Business and Human Rights Resource Centre reported that it almost amounts to an estimated $150 billion of illicit profits a year. Then we go on and when we delved into further into the statistics, that 24 million people are reported to be in forced labour, and 15.4 million people are reported to be in forced marriage. 70% of these are women and girls, and these figures are obviously worldwide. I mean, the world is three times richer in terms of global GDP than it was 30 years ago, yet we have historic levels of inequality, and we are still talking about slavery. Felicity, you know, it is quite astonishing. And I said, I probably sound really ignorant saying that, but I'm just, you know, saying it as a layperson to this subject. Let's explain to our listeners, what do we actually mean by modern slavery in the corporate world, which is also referred to as forced labour?
Yeah, look, the figures are shocking. And one argument is, of course, the increase in GDP has been created off the backs of exploited people. But this is illegal rather than a politics podcast, so I think it's quite important to focus on how we're identifying the exploitation of people. So we call it modern slavery because we recognise that there are many different ways in which people are exploited, from human trafficking to servitude to forced labour to forced marriage. So what we've got is this umbrella term that tries to encapsulate all these different ways of that people are exploited for personal or commercial gain. And obviously what we're talking about today is the corporate world. So a lot of these topics are a long way out of people's mindsets. But as we go through, I think probably the topics that people do know about is the exploitation of people in fast fashion and the exploitation of people in food production. And once you say it in that way, people can think, oh yeah, those are massive industries making a fortune, and it is an area where people, I can understand that people are exploited. So Hattie, I don't think you're ignorant. I just think it's that we've come up with this term that covers so many things. We have to try and unpack what it means for the corporate world, where there might be coercion or financial bondage and the treatment of people in corporate supply chains is hidden, that there's imbalances and poor employment practices and poor recruitment practices. So this really comes under the umbrella of business and human rights, on which there are UN guiding principles. So what the UK and other states are trying to do is say, well, look, we've got these guiding principles at international level. What do they mean domestically? And what does it mean in the context of global trade, where your supply chains could be from somewhere on the other side of the planet?
Well, you often hear, I mean, I've certainly heard over the years, again, I say this as a layperson myself, you know, that, oh, the trainers that you buy here that cost you £100 were made somewhere far, far away by a 10-year-old child.
Yeah, and there you are. You see, we do have some knowledge. It may not be in our daily working life. It might be our knowledge as a result of our interest in these topics. But what's important is for the corporate world, there are now some responsibilities. And at the moment, they're largely reporting responsibilities. So the UK has a Modern Slavery Act that requires certain corporates to report on what they've done to in terms of due diligence in their supply chains. And Australia has a similar, slightly stricter reporting mechanism. These are largely for corporates, international global corporations with massive turnover, but it has a knock-on effect down the line. And whilst there are no actual sanctions, there is a developing area of law around due diligence and
corporate responsibility,
but then going beyond that to whether or not there can be a duty of care, because what the reporting mechanisms encourage is not just voluntary disclosure, if you like, or reporting on when you've found slavery in supply chains, but that the corporates will remedy that so that they engage with their suppliers rather than simply saying, right, we're not going to contract with you anymore, so you leave people at greater risk. The idea is that from a human rights perspective, the corporate world is engaging in remedying that. So there should be this top-down effect on suppliers all the way down the chain to remedy the problem.
I think that's very interesting, because that approach has to be the right way to look at how can this actually be improved, fixed. I mean, I don't think we can ever eliminate most things on this earth and most practices. However, in order to, what's the best fix? And like you say, if a corporate business is going to say, oh, we've just found out you're using underage children in your production line, or you're not paying, you know, the minimum wage of what is expected, and therefore we won't do business with you. That approach, again, like you say, is leaving anybody that's in that position as being, exploited, to just continue to be exploited, because the owner of whoever's forcing them to do the work will say, well, we just go and find another client to service. But the charity Unseen, reports that forced labour remains the top exploitation type of identified slavery through its Modern Slavery helpline. Can we discuss some examples of where and how modern slavery in the corporate world is taking place, please?
Look, I think building on what I've said already is that we've got human trafficking. So that might be the use of violence or threats or coercion to transport, recruit or harbour people in order to exploit them for forced labour. So the example that we have had very, very recently was at the tail end of 2019, the bodies of 39 people discovered in a refrigerated lorry in Grays in Essex.
That was horrific. That was,
yeah,
horrific.
And I think that tragedy brought to global attention the issue of modern slavery. These are desperate people travelling for work. And one of the issues that the business and human rights mechanisms do is bring these things to public attention. We understand the overlap between criminal conduct and corporate supply. We can see the movement and exploitation of people. We can see perpetrators of human exploitation being prosecuted. But equally, what we can do is move public awareness. So it's not just about smuggling migrants, which might at one point have been the headline. It's understanding the exploitation of people. That's an extreme example, but how there can be public awareness that how important it is to treat those people as victims of a global problem. So human trafficking is one example. Forced labour is another. So people who are forced to do to work against their will under threat of punishment. So we think of that historically, but there's ample evidence that this is occurring. And we might think of that in the context of particularly children or men working in the fishing industry, well, for example.
This is the statistics that I've read, you know, that corporate slavery, modern slavery, is existing from the construction industry to the FIFA World Cup stadiums, yeah. Cattle ranches in Paraguay, fisheries in Thailand to agriculture in Italy, and the production chains of clothes, food and services consumed globally are reported to be tainted with forced labour. And these are all areas of life which are very familiar to the everyday person. You know, we've all heard of a FIFA World Cup stadium. We all know what the construction industry is about. But when you know, I guess those statistics, those global statistics of 24 million people reportedly being in forced labour and $150 billion of illicit profits as a result of it, you know, they don't exist for no reason. They're global figures because it's actually in so many different areas of life.
Yeah, and I think the phrase that you commonly hear is sort of carrot and stick. So what you're saying to corporates is report on yourselves, fess up if you've got this in your supply chain. You might not have intended it, but you've got to go and have a look for it and carry out some due diligence. But fess up, and because otherwise there's some significant reputational damage. If you don't try and remedy this, then you suffer the reputational damage. And there's plenty of examples where it's discovered and reported that a business is using child labour, for example.
I was just going to say,
then you don't buy your fake handbag or even your real handbag from that organisation. But yeah, just before you do, to say that it's slightly more interesting than that, in the sense that now what corporates are doing is they're able to show, look what we're doing about this. So they understand the risks of reputational damage can cost them billions if it's found in their supply chains. But what the reporting mechanisms allow corporates to do, if there's buy-in, is to say, actually, we're trying to fix this. It wasn't our direct company. It was two or three stages down the line, and we're trying to correct this. We're trying to help these people. We're trying to eradicate. And then it becomes two things, I think. One is a compliance exercise, and we can talk about that a bit later on in the podcast. And the other is a marketing exercise that they can be held to account on. They say, look, we've eradicated, if they say we've eradicated modern slavery in our supply chains, then they can get some good press out of that and some good reputation out of that. So it is a bit carrot and stick. It's how do you develop human rights principles within the corporate world and not just see everything as about profit without regard for those people who are doing the work.
No, absolutely. I mean, what I was going to say was that, you know, we mentioned the term supply chains for corporate brands, and over the years how corporate companies have been exposed to having modern slavery in their supply chains. But how, you know, I can understand that when you're so big and you're corporate, that somewhere down your food chain, where the top of the food chain is just not aware, not, you know, not even, you know, there's no way of them to even be aware. You know, there are challenges, I guess, for the corporate world to be able to be aware. And you know, you've spoken and mentioned about the processes in place and the structures that they should have in place. But how do these actually finally get exposed? How do they get exposed? Because could you imagine somebody in you know, who's being forced to work or being under the pressure of having to work and keep quiet. I can't imagine how that person would finally blow the whistle, if you like, and whoever they'll blow the whistle to might say, just shut up and be quiet, because, you know, your breadline's on the line here, literally. How does it actually even
I think again, there's probably there's a lot of answers to this, but two that I'm going to give you today, which is, if we think about the Rana Plaza tragedy. So Rana Plaza is a factory in Bangladesh that collapsed. And most of the headlines are about the building to start with, and then obviously how many people died. And the building was unsafe. And we might think of that as health and safety. But when you realise the type of work that was being done in that building was factory work by women and children, you start to think, well, hang on, what was going on there? Unsafe building, mostly women and children, the people who died. For me, it rings an alarm bell about modern slavery, that we have to stop thinking about it as it fits in with health and safety, or it fits in with employment law, that there's this need for transparency in supply chains that is more than just appointing a modern slavery person in your organization to turn up and say, is everything all right here? Speak to a manager who says, yeah, everything's fine, and ignore what's going on in the ground. So Rana Plaza is another shocking example, a bit like the people in the back of the lorry in Essex, that hundreds of people die if there isn't what I would call corporate compliance with human rights issues. So the second point that I would make is, actually, this is about compliance, and there are regulatory requirements and legal requirements on corporates to comply with things like health and safety law, but also with where I think it fits is with quality management. So normally we think about modern slavery in the context of procurement. So where are you procuring your supplies from? Let's have a look at the suppliers. Let's see where we're procuring. Can we use due diligence in that supply chain? But I think it's about more than that. You have to have a holistic look at the whole business, because you might have health and safety issues. You might have procurement issues. You may have employment issues. And you might have product quality issues. But if you think of the quality of the business as a whole, you can change the culture of the business through corporate compliance. And I know everybody hates red tape, but quality is quite a good way, because, and one example I can give you is in construction, let's say you procure a product that is defective in some way. It's not compliant with British standards. Let's think cladding on Grenfell Tower.
Yes.
And actually, I think I'm not going to comment on whether or not that cladding was compliant at the time that it was erected. But if we think about that as an example, let's say you've got a building that's got non-compliant cladding on it. You would expect that to be picked up before the cladding is put on the building. So I'm not going into Grenfell as an example of non-compliant cladding. I'm using it as an example to say, well, we expect our products to be of quality, and we have these standards, quality standards. And in the construction industry, if that product is not to our standards, then it has to be taken out and replaced to something that to the correct standard. Now, that can cost millions in construction, absolutely millions. Now, that incurs the safety of the people within the building. But in order to understand their safety, you also have to understand how many people are in the building, how they work, what's the right standard of material to have on that building. There might be several sorts of different cladding or several sorts of different types of products, and you've got to source the correct one for the circumstance. So you need to know who's working inside that building, what their working conditions are. So I actually think it's about not just the quality of the product, but the quality of the business overall.
I completely get that, and I think, you know, that's completely understandable. But as a corporate, if you cannot afford to increase your cost because not using the supplier that you are to either collect the material or produce your material, produce part of your product. It's just going to take your product out of the commerciality bracket. It's going to be too expensive for what it is. People won't buy it. And do you think that some corporates have that issue of saying, look, we know that somewhere down the line it might be a bit murky with how this is all coming about and ending up in our glamorous Bond Street stores, for example, or in our glossy magazines as the, you know, the product to buy. But if we change what we have, the option of increasing the cost, and I go back to, you know, as the example of getting a better quality product, etc., just makes it, it's not viable for us to produce it at that because of the cost element, that we'll just turn the blind eye. Do you think that issue exists, Felicity?
I think that mindset exists. I don't think that issue exists if you actually explore it. So again, if you if I just use the example that I've just used, if you think of the millions that might be lost in a poor product, if that wasn't picked up in a holistic assessment of the culture of the business in terms of best quality product, best quality business, then it is going to cost millions, sometimes billions, to fix. You think of Rana Plaza, that's a whole factory that's collapsed. A number of people have died where there's a compensation claim. The fallout from something like that can obviously could potentially be the end of that corporate if they're connected with that sort of event. So down the supply chain, there are risks. And this is about risk management as well as
corporate responsibility.
And the reason the language of due diligence is used is because corporates get that. They're already doing it in other areas. I think what they've missed is this, the need for the change of culture to think about quality all the way down the line.
I think
don't
there's
cut
another...
corners, don't cheapskate, because in the end, it will come back. You'll either suffer significant reputational damage or massive costs as a result of a failure.
I think one of the things you said earlier made real sense. You know, you can also, as a corporate, add to your reputation by saying, we source responsibly. I'm starting to see that in a lot of places of late, and I'm talking about the last year or two. I think the first place I saw it, when I was coming down an escalator in Marks and Spencer's, and on the there was a great big sort of banner on the wall saying our salmon is sourced responsibly. And I thought, oh, that's good. I'll get some salmon from here then. Automatically, my consumer mind gives credit to M&S. And you hear about cotton being sourced responsibly. And I think that's a really key and important point for corporates to think about, because even with, for example, organic foods, we are prepared as consumers to pay more for an organic product of whatever it might be. And I've got an organic t-shirt, for example, that cost me probably five times the cost of the normal t-shirt that I could pick up for a fiver somewhere. And then you're talking about foods. I've got a organic brush. I don't know how that ends up being organic, but it is. And actually, it's right here. I'm going to show it to you. This is it. I know our listeners can't see it.
Oh, there you go. Yes,
this
I
is
can.
Organic, and it's vegan. It said vegan when I bought it. Now that automatically, although it doesn't look like a fancy brush, it made me in the supermarket pick this up over the brush that was, again, less than half the cost of it. That was, I knew, was the good old plastic brush that I could use for years. So I think that's a really important point for corporates to think about, alongside what you've been saying, Felicity, in that if you take corporate responsibility and have a holistic approach and do your due diligence to make sure that your supply chains are up to the game and they're not involved in any murky corporate slavery practices, it could benefit your company and bring you more recognition. And people, if your costs do go up because you've had to break a chain that was just cheap and cheerful and cheapskatey, as you said, which I love, then, you know, and you shout about that actually you are above board, then you people very likely are prepared to pay more for that.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think it always means paying more, and that needs to be understood. Essentially,
yep, true.
The problem with fast fashion is that it's based on quantity. So you end up spending as much money on lots of things as you would on one better quality item. So that's why I tend to talk about quality. But look, people have been working on sustainability for years, and I think sustainability is a significant part of corporate compliance. So that's why I talk about the corporate culture. You've got to think health and safety, sustainability, modern slavery. And certainly in the context of the modern slavery reporting, there is a change of culture amongst big corporates that essentially, rather than walking away, what the Modern Slavery Act expects is for companies to effectively lean in and tackle the issues that have been identified. So you get companies like Marks and Spencer's that we've mentioned, or Tesco's or Nestle or Asos or British Telecom reporting on how they've examined their supply chains and where they've discovered modern slavery. For example, in seafood supply, they've worked with companies, with civil society, with governments, with ports, with workers, to tackle what are the root causes of this. How can we show leadership in this area and
help fix
that,
it?
That increases footfall.
Fix it. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
And we've can feel confident where you're buying your products from, that they are quality products with quality arrangements with workers who are not being exploited.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It might include not just improving workers' conditions and access to jobs, but ensuring that there is equal pay, for example, which we hopefully all bought into.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a very little amount of time, and I'm going to ask you a big question. So here we go. What is the UK government doing to deal with corporate slavery and forced labour in supply chains? How does our legal system punish corporates who use supply chains, often outside of the UK, that are participating in corporate slavery?
Look, that is a huge question, but I think it's important to see that these are, first of all, what has happened is there's a buy-in. So there's a commitment to business and human rights, and there's a commitment to human rights generally, and there's an understanding that this is an issue for corporate responsibility. And so there is, then comes the Modern Slavery Act, where there becomes this opportunity to report. It's, to a certain extent, it's voluntary in the sense that that there has to be some buy-in. So it started out where you could report, but you didn't have to. Your report could just say, well, we haven't done it. But now if you look at the reports, you can see that there is some real buy-in. Then there's three-year reviews. So how's it going? What are we doing? What more do we need to do? Where is it working? Where is it not working? So there's a sort of chain of legal requirements that are now largely about regulatory standards and corporate compliance. That is what is generally overseen by a quality manager, if the business has a quality manager, working together with all those different areas, so that boards, for example, can sign off on modern slavery statements with confidence that everything is being done to improve the supply chain. So I think the easiest thing to say is there is a modern slavery report from 2019, particularly for the UK. It's also worth looking at the Australian situation, but certainly in relation to the UK government, there's an annual report on modern slavery, and the 2019 report is publicly available. I don't think we've got 2020 yet. I haven't seen it. If I'm wrong about that, I apologise. And that's obviously, frankly, a very accessible report that I'm sure you can add a link to in with this podcast.
Yes, absolutely. We'll do that in our news and report section when we air the podcast. I think that'll be really helpful.
What they say is that the UK's response is to pursue, to prevent, to protect, to prepare, and to internationally engage. So they've got this mission statements, but the reports have a look at whether that mission is being achieved. And in particular, the report talks about what the future responses are. So there is buy-in, absolutely, that there should be quality product and quality supply chains supplying to the UK and from the UK, so that the international effort to fight modern slavery is domestic and supported by commitments to overseas development. So
absolutely,
look,
I mean, we
fulfilling
have to,
that call to action.
I think we, you know, as the UK, we have to take the responsibility of saying no when it's not good enough product because it's come through murky waters. I think we really, really should be there now. In 2021, we should be able to do that and say that, and hopefully with more awareness. And I think with more consumer awareness, i.e., you know, not buying products where openly there has been a report that modern slavery is being used, and we said it comes in different forms. I mean, I have got a chart here which is absolutely astonishing because it's the breakdown of labour exploitation by sector in the UK. And the top 10, where known, of labour exploitation by sector, the most exploited industry market is car washes. Apparently, the most exploited labour exploitation in the UK is car washes. The second is beauty and spa. Third is construction. Fourth is hospitality. Fifth is agriculture and farming. Sixth, retail. Seventh, manufacturing. I was surprised. I thought manufacturing would come a bit higher, but there you go. Eighth is the care sector. Ninth, transportation and logistics. And 10th is entertainment. I thought that was astonishing.
Yeah, and as I say, but if you're thinking about huge corporates in global supply chains, that's billions and billions of dollars of cost, and in not just human exploitation, but in reputational damage if discovered, and the cost of replacing products if they are not sufficient quality products, but also that cost in criminal conduct. So there are, of course, situations that we've discussed where there's this overlap with not just corporate responsibility, but criminal responsibility. So look, for example, the reviews that are laid in Parliament in relation to modern slavery. So there's a independent reviews that Parliament has to consider. Think about, well, having an independent anti-slavery commissioner. So you can bring together all those elements that you've just spoken about, all those different types of supply chain situations and sectors, to think about, well, what can we learn from each one? What the issues may be different in each one, and what's the learning on how we can tackle modern slavery and maintain production, obviously, which is why remedying situations is so important, because you actually want your supply chain to continue. And in the end, what we can see from transparency in supply chains and the legal application of the Modern Slavery Act is, whilst it falls short on punishment, if you like, the buy-in is that corporates start to realise that there is money to be made out of providing, of being seen to tackle modern slavery, and that it means that there won't be an additional cost to the consumer. That by tackling modern slavery, by ensuring both product and working conditions down your supply chain are of suitable quality, that massively reduces remediation costs. So let's use construction again as our example. The figures for remedying defects in construction run into millions, if not billions. But if you deal with it as an upfront corporate cost at the beginning, it's a lot cheaper because you have a quality product down the line. And the same mindset has to be had in relation to people. If you've got a quality setup in the beginning, then it's not going to cost you down the line when your factory in Bangladesh collapses and loads of people are killed.
Felicity, that is all we've got time for today, but thank you so much for your time. I thought that was incredibly informative. And as I was saying to you before we started recording, I know there's going to be segments and areas of this following on from this that we can talk about and expand on and give our listeners a lot more information on. But thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Look, some of those examples were quite extreme.
But they have to be.
But you have to think about also the routine. Like, are we using due diligence in what we do? It can be a bit boring. Compliance doesn't sound exciting, but it is the answer. Checking and double checking that you're doing things properly.
Compliance may not sound exciting, but criminal offences certainly don't sound great either. No, so on that note, I am going to say thank you again and tell our listeners to don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.